Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It is Wednesday, May 27th, 2015, and I'm here in sunny Clearwater, Florida. And today we're going to talk about coffee. And we haven't talked about coffee on the show before, but coffee, well, it has had some bad things about it that I think we all know. New studies are starting to say that coffee can actually be healthy for us. And some of the health benefits of coffee that are coming to the fore now are that, number one, coffee contains a lot of antioxidants. It's even been called the number one source of antioxidants in the United States. And antioxidants are really important if you're being exposed to toxic chemicals, because toxic chemicals destroy your body in a way that antioxidants counteract. So everybody should be taking a ton of antioxidants from all different sources, and coffee apparently turns out to be one of them. Other things that ways that coffee benefit your health are it can help protect against type 2 diabetes. It's said to protect against Parkinson's disease. It has set, researchers say that it prevents against erectile dysfunction. So lots of benefits. But there are also the downsides to coffee. So everybody needs to decide for themselves if they want to drink coffee, if it will help them. It can even be good for the heart. It can help prevent liver disease. So you have to weigh the benefits and the risks. But one of the big things about coffee is that it is sprayed with a tremendous amount of toxic pesticides. So if you're drinking regular coffee, you're going to have the negative health effects of the pesticides. And that might be part of the downside, because we don't know when people are doing studies on coffee, if they're using regular coffee or organic coffee. But today we're going to talk about organic coffee, because if you're going to drink coffee, it's best to drink organic. My guest today is Barry Gromala. He'll tell us if I pronounce that right. He's the co-founder and president of Bean Trees Fine Organic Coffee. Hi, Barry.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic.
Good. And how do you say your name?
You got it right. Barry Gromala.
I'm always very conscious about that, because a lot of people have difficulty pronouncing my name. So I always want to make sure I do it right. So where are you?
I'm out in sunny Sacramento, California.
That's right. That's right. I used to live in California.
Not quite Florida, but it's okay.
Good. So how did you get interested in selling coffee, and why organic?
Well, I just want to tell you first that you actually hit the nail on the head. You've done your research, and your introduction was very accurate.
Thank you.
And so I started this company 22 years ago, 1993. There, believe it or not, wasn't even any Starbucks in California at that time. And nobody, the coffee craze hadn't been here. And it was before that, I was a contemporary art dealer. And I was on a plane back from an art show in Hawaii, and it was a total accident. This was the early 90s, where we were having a mini recession, so a lot of my clients weren't, you know, buying the same amount of art that they'd used to buy, and a lot of my clients were corporations. And so this is, again, how things worked, you know, back then, is that the gentleman I was with in Hawaii wanted to switch tickets so he could fly home with his girlfriend. So we just switched tickets. You know, back in that day, your ID didn't have to match the ticket.
Right.
So I was on the wrong airline. I was on Delta instead of United, and picked up their in-flight magazine and saw a woman who had a coffee cart up in Seattle, you know, that was grossing like $300,000 a year.
Wow.
And I said, that sure seems like an interesting business. And at the time, I didn't even drink coffee. You know, the only coffee I'd had was probably heavily polluted, you know, Folgers out camping when I was a kid.
Right.
And so reading about this, what I realized in California is that the only buildings mainly in the Bay Area that had coffee carts, it was very heavy grunge scene. It was Seattle, lots of dreadlocks, lots of facial piercings. Nobody had really had more than a couple locations. And so in that day, I decided I wanted to be the Nordstrom's of that part of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And now I like to say we're the Dolce & Gabbana. So what I decided to do is come up with an idea that I thought was a pretty, you know, good idea for a coffee shop. And what I did is selling art to these big corporations like Hewlett Packard and Intel, I realized it was a very neat niche that hadn't been explored. And so I was the first guy to really put kiosks in corporations, kind of like you see them in the airports.
Yeah.
And so we started, again, the way these things unfolded were just, you know, kind of all by accident. And
by accident.
One accident after another.
And I know those kinds of things.
And back in those days, the big, or even in these days, the big food service companies are the ones who manage most of the food in the big corporations. And so through a series of events, I was able to negotiate a contract to go into Hewlett Packard, and we put a coffee kiosk in there. And my idea was to have a business model that had a coffee shop that was Monday through Friday, no evenings, no weekends, every holiday off, completely secured environment, and I didn't have to pay a penny to get anybody to come into my shop because they were already there at a default of coming to work.
What a smart business model.
Well, it was completely luck. And, you know, I didn't want to work evenings and weekends, so it was kind of selfish, but it seemed okay. And we happened to just hit in the beginning of the dot-com. So before I knew it, you know, within 3 years, we had 18 locations and 150 employees.
Wow.
And we basically, all of our business, the flaw in my business model was that these things were lightly staffed because they weren't full-blown cafes. Mm-hmm. So when we had people call in sick or drunk or hungover, there wasn't a lot of, you know, back support to fill in the locations.
Yeah.
And we had locations from Reno to Sacramento to Santa Rosa, then throughout the Silicon Valley. At one point, I had two business partners that didn't work out, so all of a sudden I was in charge of everything. And I realized I was never going to grow to be an old man managing teenagers during the dot-com.
Yeah.
So I sold off all the locations through licensing agreements. And what I found is that having, you know, kind of like a franchise system without all the regulations, is that having people run these operations and had a financial stake in it, as opposed to just a paid, you know, an hourly employee, it was like me doing it myself. You know, they mm-hmm. never came in sick, they never called in hungover, and they had great customer service. And so at that point, I just, you know, the business had grown so fast that we were doing development, we were operating, we were licensing, and doing wholesale. You know, and it just kind of all evolved out of itself. So I got rid of all the businesses except for the wholesale and decided just to focus on that. About 6 months into the business, my current provider, I guess the best way to say, had a business disagreement. And so instead of litigating, I just left and started learning more about coffee and learned about organic coffee. And, of course, I had never heard about that. And after about 3 more months of literally everybody I talked to about it said the same thing, is that don't do organic coffee because no one's doing it.
So you were one of the original people who started selling organic coffee, yes?
I actually started the organic coffee, was a board member of the Organic Coffee Association, which is now defunct, but was one of the very originals. There were a few people dabbling in it. I was the only guy to become 100% organic. You know, a lot of people had maybe 3 or 4, you know, organic offerings. But once I learned about it, I decided that, hey, you know, I'm going to be the guy who steps off the edge and is purely organic. And it was a big risk. There wasn't a lot of really good organic coffee back then, and what was, you know, quite expensive.
Yes.
And the reason that I made that decision is that what I came to find out is that coffee is the second largest commodity in the world.
Wait a minute. I don't want to interrupt you mid-sentence, but we need to go to break. And if I don't interrupt you now, I'm going to have to interrupt you later.
Perfect.
When we come back, you can finish your sentence. You're
Thank
listening
you.
To Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Barry Gromala. He's the co-founder and president of Bean Trees Fine Organic Coffee, and their website is beantrees.com. They've got so many coffees. He's going to tell you about this later, but it's really, go to the website and look at it. Be right back. listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Barry Gromala. He's the co-founder and president of Bean Trees Fine Organic Coffee, which is at beantrees.com. So, Barry, tell us about what's so bad about non-organic coffee. But first, finish your sentence.
Oh, where was this? I don't even remember where the sentence was.
Okay, then let's go on.
We'll move on. Basically, coffee is the second largest second largest commodity in the world today, second mm-hmm. only after oil. What most people don't know is that coffee is also one of the largest agricultural polluters because it's all grown in the tropics. So virtually or literally for every pound of coffee that makes it to market, and again, this is not the entire world encompassing because there's always exceptions, but the majority of the coffee that's produced that's not organic is one of the largest agricultural polluters in the world. And unfortunately, these are chemicals that we make in America that are strictly regulated or not even legal to use in America. But for some reason, our government allows us to ship them down to Central and South America and Indonesia and Africa without regard. And these are chemicals like DDT, BHT, lindane, endosulfan, diazinon, disulfiton, methyl parethion, you know, just it goes on and on and on. Yeah. And one of the most amazing things is that all the coffee in the world 80 years ago was organic, you know, as was everything before literally World War II. There was no chemicals and no real distribution in place. Right. So today, we're dumping hundreds of millions of pounds and hundreds of millions of gallons of the most toxic chemicals on the most fertile places in the planet because all of the coffee is grown 10 degrees north or south of the equator in the tropical zones all the way around the planet. Mm-hmm. And 2 years ago, organic coffee got named as the single largest imported organic product to America.
Wow.
More than anything else. Additionally, for the last 10 years, the organic coffee market has exploded and grown at over 29% annually for over 10 years, where the rest of the specialty coffee market has only grown at like 1.5%. So the other thing is that organic coffee does bring a premium to the growers. Mm-hmm. And in the third world, when you have any kind of premium, it, you know, it's extremely beneficial. 25 cents a pound to them, you know, translates to $2 or $3 a pound for me or you in the world we live in.
Yeah.
So, in my opinion, there is no other product on the face of the planet that can do more to help the global environment and to raise the socioeconomic level of hundreds of thousands of farmers than coffee. And so, what kind of hit me in the head was that if you can have a product that tastes as good, that's organic, that tastes as good or better than non-organic for virtually the same price, the question isn't why, but why not?
I agree
and
with
so
you.
My goal was to basically, you know, mainline or mainstream, however you have it, organic coffee into, you know, regular parts of America. And getting people to commit, you know, to that was a huge deal. We had about 18 years ago, we got the coffee contract at Yahoo's corporate headquarters down in Sunnyvale.
Uh-huh.
When they were just barely a two-year-old company. And we had done all the coffee there for about 18 years, and it was 100% organic through the entire campus that served, you know, over 3,500 people every single day. And so we have just, for the last 10 years, really focused on driving organic coffee. You know, because literally, even though it may be a dollar a pound more than non-organic, mm-hmm. since you get 50 cups per pound, that's only 2 cents a cup. Additionally, in the last couple of years, I think 6 out of the last 10 Gold Cup winning coffees, you know, throughout various countries have all been organic. So organic coffee is really on the forefront. There's no reason not to drink organic coffee, and it's readily available through Bean Trees and, you know, several other really great companies.
We have a couple minutes to the break. Could you comment on, there's a lot of different brands now. Obviously, you were in the beginning and you have a lot of experience and you may know more than, like I know that I know more than a lot of people who are talking about toxics now. Are there differences in organic cotton, I mean, organic copies that we should be looking at, that we should be aware of?
Not really. Unfortunately, in the coffee world, like a lot of the other parts of the world, there's a multitude of actual certifications.
Yeah.
Some of the ones that people are familiar with are Fair Trade, Shade Grown, Bird Friendly, Eco OK, Rainforest Certification. And the unfortunate problem with all of these certifications are that none of them are enforced by anybody except for the people who invented them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're literally marketing advantages to help push their brand.
Mm-hmm.
The OCIA and the organic standards through the federal government took over 10 years of development. You know, these started after I had started. So for the first, you know, half of Beantree's career, there was no certification. So we were depending, you know, on the farmers and the traders and the buyers to make sure what was happening. But so now that's the only certification that exists that has any level of enforcement whatsoever. So there's a lot of companies, you know, who have all these different coffees with all these different certifications. And unfortunately, the majority of them are marketing ploys to help develop their brand. And a lot of companies will have an organic line. I think, like, you know, the Starbucks has one organic coffee.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see a lot of the other major new and upcoming players adding an organic coffee in, you know, so they have a line or a couple offerings that are organic. The problem with that, again, to me, is they're not committing completely. You know, they're basically saying, hey, we want to take advantage of the expanding and burgeoning market, but only to the point that it makes us some more money and that as a company, you know, we don't really care.
Yeah. There's a lot in the whole field of things non-toxic. That's true in every type of product. That there are companies who are dedicated like you, and then there are companies who are just kind of doing it because that's what the market is moving towards. And I think it's really important for people to see the difference between those two things. We need to go to break again. So we'll be back and talk more with Barry about organic coffee. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And you can go to Barry's website at beantrees.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And my guest today is Barry Gramala, co-founder and president of Beantrees Fine Organic Coffee. And his website is beantrees.com. Barry, I love it that you are not only doing organic, but that you're also doing it on a gourmet level, that you're doing it with extra specialness, not just any old organic coffee, but in a way that really shows it's how wonderful it is as a food.
We've been very lucky. In 20 plus years of the business, we've never paid a penny for advertising ever. All
wow.
of our marketing is word of mouth and referral. And like any product or commodity, whether it's, you know, a wine, grapes, or coffee beans, they change from year to year depending on the environment and the ground. And basically, mm-hmm. coffee beans or wine grapes, the flavor comes from the dirt. And if you use more and more chemicals every year, you know, initially or finally after, you know, depending on how many chemicals you use, the dirt becomes, you know, not fertile. It basically becomes inert. And the only way to grow the coffee is with the chemicals. And so you see all these beautiful pictures of the coffee trees growing in the rainforest. But the bottom line is when you get a little closer, you'll see there's no bugs in the dirt. And there's no birds in the trees. It's a totally artificially maintained environment with all these massive amounts of chemicals. And unfortunately, the farmers don't have a lot of time with the education or the ability to understand the chemicals. And like what we learned here in the Dust Bowl in the Midwest is after a certain amount of years, if you put on more and more chemicals, it just, you know, the ground just doesn't produce anymore.
Right.
And so, you know, that really affects the birds, you know, that fly up and down, you know, from North and South America, you know, back and forth, and it's just an atrocity that nobody's really knows about. One of the big things, because of all the chemical poisoning, is it's estimated over 300,000 women and children die every year because of coffee production. And the reason this doesn't get out there is it's the third world. They don't know,
right.
You know, they're dying from cancer from these chemicals. One of the things that happens, again, it goes unreported, is that the majority of all the containers from DDT to you name it that come in end up being used in the kitchen to store drinking water. Because, as the farmers say, there's no containers that are, you know, these containers never leak, as they say, and there's nothing they can get that holds water better that's free. And
wow.
In the third world, you know, that's a big deal. You know, one of the things we hit on a little bit that's really, I think, important for people to know is, you know, there's a lot of greenwashing in America.
Right, there is.
People who try to show they're doing, you know, the good thing, and again, it's all a marketing ploy, and it's all about, unfortunately, you know, the dollar. In my opinion, one of those biggest problems is with the fastest growing certification in America, which probably almost everybody has seen, called the Rainforest Alliance.
Yes.
That's the one with the little green, you know, emblem with a frog in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And people associate Rainforest Alliance with another organization called Rainforest Foundation. The Rainforest Foundation was started by Sting and his wife, Trudy Styler. The two have nothing, you know, in common, just a similar name.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with Rainforest Alliance is if you look on the symbol, in order to put the symbol on your package, only 30% of the product in the package needs to be certifiable. So that means the other 70% could be anything.
That just is such a small percentage. You know, I think one of the things about seals, I just need to say, is that when you see whatever the seal is, not just Rainforest Alliance, but that when you see a seal, it just kind of gives you the idea that somebody checked this out and it's all okay.
Right.
And yet, most people don't even ever go and look and see what does the seal mean.
Right. And again, one of these things, people say, well, why is the Rainforest Alliance the fastest growing seal in America? It's because anybody can have it for virtually nothing.
Yeah.
And so when big corporations say, oh, we need to be greener, they go out and find almost anything they can put the Rainforest Alliance certificate on. And the crazy thing is that, you know, the people at Rainforest Alliance are very open and, you know, honest, which I do appreciate, and their candor. As I said, well, that means you can put 30%, you know, certified product in there, and the other 70% can be technified, you know, full sun-grown coffee with tons of chemicals. And they said, yes, that's true, but that's not what we intend. Well, that's kind of like, in my opinion, the whole certification. It's not organic. It just says we still use chemicals, but they're less toxic chemicals. You know, or we recirculate the water when it's possible. So it's, you know, in my opinion, it's just kind of doing, it's a bunch of fluff.
Yeah.
And there's, when things aren't right, well then, you know, it doesn't work. But the big thing is that I don't understand how you can put a brand or certificate on a product and then in tiny 1/16 inch letters, you know, around the edge says it only maintains 30% of the product meets our certification, and the certification is pretty lax to begin with. So it gives me no confidence.
I don't understand that, too. I don't understand that, too. Barry, could you tell us, we've talked about the chemical aspects of non-organic coffee, but could you just, like, paint us a little picture of what an organic coffee-growing plantation is like for people who aren't really familiar with organic?
Yeah, I mean, typically, to be certified organic, we have lot numbers, and every bean in every bag is traced from the farm to the co-op to the shipping container to the roaster to me. So there's a paper trail of all of it. Again, growing in the tropics, you know, it's hard because there are funguses, and it's very hard to grow organically. But luckily, in the last 20 years, especially the last decade, a lot of information from Santa Cruz, California, you know, has been developed growing organically. So by contrast to the chemicals typically used, organic agriculture focuses on building healthy soil through techniques like composting, intercropping, terracing, the introduction of appropriate biological pest control, which basically means bugs that eat, you know, the good bugs that eat the bad bugs.
Right.
Shade trees such as mangoes and banana, and basically a whole system of compatible, sustainable agricultural farming techniques that have really been developed over the last decade.
And so the result of all of that is that you have an ecosystem that can be sustained that also produces coffee.
Correct. Sustained indefinitely.
Right. As opposed to destroying the whole entire ecosystem and the soil and everything else. So to me, it's like when I eat or drink something, I'm really aware of all of these things. And so I can know that when I'm drinking your organic coffee, which is actually sitting on my desk right now, and I'm sipping it while we're talking, I know that when I'm drinking that, what I see in my mind is this beautiful ecosystem that is being supported by this cup of coffee. And I think that if people could imagine what goes behind the product, that I think that we would make a lot better decisions. We need to go to break again. And when we come back, we'll talk more about organic coffee. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Barry Gromala. He's the co-founder and president of Bean Trees Fine Organic Coffee, and the website is beantrees.com. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Barry Gromala. He's the co-founder and president of Bean Trees Fine Organic Coffee at beantrees.com. So, Barry, tell us about all your wonderful coffees. I mean, you even have the thing that really caught my eye first was that your decaf coffee is decaffeinated with mountain water.
Right. The decaf coffee industry is very unusual, is that the number one chemical, which 95% of the coffee in America is decaffeinated with, is a chemical called methylene chloride. And if you
toxic.
Type methylene chloride into the internet, the number one use in America for that chemical is to embalm people when they die.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, in the process, it's said that all of the chemicals are washed and roasted off during the process of making the coffee. Well, we have numerous clients across the country who are chemical sensitive and say that they cannot drink even a half a cup of the competitors' coffees that are decaffeinated with that chemical versus the water process. In the past, maybe 30, 40 years, it was only Swiss water process, which was kind of counterproductive because the only place they did it was in Canada on the East Coast. So that all the coffee we want decaffeinated had to use all the fuel to ship all the way across the country and then all the way back. About 6 or 7 years ago, a group made a mountain water process, which actually is a three-step instead of the two-step Swiss water. And the mountain water process is actually done at the border in Mexico before it comes up into California, saving phenomenal amounts of money, transportation, and fuel. And it actually makes a much better cup by adding in the third process. So Our decaf is 99.8% decaffeinated, and a lot of people can't taste that it is actually decaffeinated. Same thing with flavored coffees. You know, a lot of people say, oh, flavored coffee is no good. Real people don't drink, real coffee drinkers don't drink flavored coffee. Well, whatever coffee you love is a good coffee, and we actually have a lot of customers. Our hazelnut is actually one of our best sellers. Unfortunately, most of the coffee flavored in America is flavored with propylene glycol, which is a binding agent that gives you the heavy, syrupy taste on your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
In order to maintain the organic integrity and certification, we can only use basically organic fruit and nut extracts.
Mm-hmm.
So the only complaint we ever get with our flavored coffee is that it's not sweet enough. And that's what we're trying to do. We don't want it to be sweet.
That's exactly right.
And the great thing is, with the flavors are so amazing, that if you add in just a tiny amount of your favorite sweetener, it's as sweet as you want, and you still have all the flavor.
And you get the choice about how sweet you want it, too.
Right. And that's why we only have, a hazelnut and a vanilla. We don't have all these crazy flavors because they're not available in organic products.
Well, give me an overview of all the different kinds of coffees that you have, because I want people to understand that organic coffee isn't just like one or two types of coffee, that you really not only can you get any kind of coffee that you want, it seems to me. I'm not a coffee connoisseur, so when I go to your website, it looks like there's more coffee than I've ever seen. And it's also really, really, really high quality in terms of its gourmetness.
Right. right. Whether it be organic coffee or regular coffee, there's cheap organic coffee and cheap regular coffee and expensive. And the price is based on quality. It's literally wormholes, broken beans, cracked beans, size. And there's so much that goes into, you know, the grading of the coffee. And, you know, just grades 1, 2, 3, and 4. Everything we do is grade 1, which is basically the top of the line, the money, you know, the best that money can buy. It's kind of like one of the things we talked about, the fair trade certification.
Mm-hmm.
We don't put a fair trade certificate on our coffee because every single one of our coffees exceeds the fair trade minimums at a default because of the level of quality that we're buying.
Right.
So that literally on the same bag, if I put a fair trade sticker on there,
mm-hmm.
the farmer would actually get less money. Because part of that's going to the transfer organization versus going all directly to the farmers.
Right.
So, and we were doing this before, you know, transfer and fair trade ever showed up. They had a good run. When they showed up, coffee prices were so low that it was a good thing. Now, the only thing fair trade coffee really is relevant for is more of the commodities, you know, the U-Bands, the Folgers, the Maxwell House, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the things I was looking online, and U-Ban has a Rainforest Alliance, you know,
Rainforest Alliance sticker?
Yeah, for U-Ban.
Okay.
So, again, it just ranges the gamut, and what we do is we try to buy the most expensive coffee, you know, that money can buy. And that's really what makes a difference is when people drink it, you know, they turn around and they look at you and they look in their cup and they go, I've never tasted anything like this.
No, I agree. I've never tasted anything like this either. It has an entirely different quality to it. And I wanted to mention, too, that one of my readers told me about you. I had never heard of you before. But when she told me about it, she also told me how she brews it. I'll just say really quickly that she does cold brewing, which I had never heard of before. But I tried it, and it's so easy. I just put... I use a French press, and I grind the beans by hand, and then I put them in the French press with cold water every night. And then in the morning, my coffee's ready, and I'm in Florida, so I drink it cold anyway. And
you know,
it tastes so different.
In my opinion, the cold brewed coffee, I've never tasted coffee that tasted better than cold
really?
Brewing. And it's just,
me too.
You know, it's hard to do on a large scale.
Yeah.
Well, because of storage. You know, we have places like universities that we serve all the coffee on campus, for the majority of it. And when we had done that, we have like 10 or 15 gallons or 20 gallons you go through a day. And there's just not room for 4 or 5 gallon buckets, you know,
yeah.
to sit overnight. So we're looking at putting it in kegs and doing other things right now. But that is hands down. There's, if you just type in cold brewed coffee, I think the name of the company is called Toddy, T-O-D-Y.
Uh-huh.
And they actually have cold brewers, cold coffee brewers you can buy for like $25.
Oh, I've never, okay, good. I'm going to look and see. My French press is working just fine. and for those who don't know what a French press is, it's a glass container with a handle and in a holder. And it's got this little screen, kind of a substantial screen with a plunger. And so you brew your coffee or tea. I use it for tea, too. I use it for everything. And then you just, when you're done brewing, you just push the screen down and it holds all the coffee beans or the tea leaves down at the bottom and you pour out your coffee or tea. And I just love it. I've had one for years and years and years. But it never occurred to me to use it for cold coffee. And it works just perfectly.
Yeah, another way you can do it is literally what they call cowboy coffee, and you can get a big coffee filter, put the coffee in it, tie the top together with a piece of string, and throw it in the water and let it sit overnight.
Oh, yeah, that's another good way, too. Yeah.
If you don't happen to have a French press, there's always ways to get around that.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us about your different types of coffee. Continue on with that.
So basically, like we said, coffee comes, you know, it all grows 10 degrees north and south of the equator all the way around the globe. So we have coffee everywhere from, you know, numerous areas in Mexico to Peru, which is probably the largest producer of organic coffee, to Nicaragua, Guatemala, you know, over to Ethiopia, Sumatra, and Timor. And one of our coffees, we call the Mocha Java, which is one of my favorite and bestsellers, and a lot of people misconstrue it, mocha meaning chocolate. You can see the mocha is spelled differently. It's M-O-C-C-A and then Java. And that's actually a 50-50 mix of coffee from Ethiopia and Sumatra.
Mm-hmm.
So we took two coffees from two opposite sides of the world and blended them together. And Mocha is the port, and one of the ports in Java is the other port city that the coffee actually comes out of.
Mm.
Hence the name Mocha Java. And I think people do buy it because they think it has, you know, it's the funny thing is it does have chocolate undertones, even though there's no chocolate in it. Kind of like,
yes,
you know,
I
wine
understand.
Has undertones.
Yeah.
And so we really, you know, 1 year, like you know, like French roast and house blend and espressos, those are typically always blends of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes our French roast is Mexican and sometimes it's Peruvian because different years, the coffees are different quality. And so that way, as, you know, one crop comes in and maybe better than the other, we can basically roast it the same, you know, and it's a little bit different, but we maintain the same quality when certain growing regions, you know, don't have such good growing years.
Yes. Yeah. So different, all these different kinds of coffees, they all taste different because, as you said earlier, that the taste of the coffee comes from the soil. And
right.
So you just need to try coffees and see the different flavors and which one you like, that a cup of coffee isn't always the same cup of coffee.
Right. And now there's a big movement for lighter roasts. You know, for a long time it was dark roast. And now there's a lot of new and upcoming companies that say if it's dark roast, it's no good. You know, and again, it's because they're promoting all they do is, you know, a medium or a light roast. It doesn't matter what anybody says. The coffee that's the best is the one that you taste and you like the most.
You like the best, yeah. Well, we only have 30 seconds left, so is there any final words you'd like to say?
No, I really appreciate this opportunity. I'd love people to really explore, you know, why organic coffee is so important. And it really comes down to the last thing. It's not why, but why not?
Yes. Thank you so much. I learned so much today. And this has been Barry Gromala from Bean Trees. It's beantrees.com. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. Be well.